So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com as well. I tell you, Ed Martin will not be here again tonight. As you guys noticed last night, he wasn't here. He's in Iowa taking care of company business. Yes, the company that Barack Obama built that Ed Springston owns, you know, he has to go take care of business with. So we don't expect to hear from him tonight either. He will return next week. In the meantime, you're stuck with me as always, of course. Phone lines are open, 858-683-1326, or area code 502-805-0334, as always. You can join us in our chat room right here at BTR, or you can actually IM instant message us right on AOL at My View Matters. For you guys that are already listening in the queue, we appreciate you listening. Just make sure you hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we will know that you want to be heard. Now, on with the news. Lots of things going on. It gets a little crazy here in Kentucky. But what's really funny, we've got a story going on right now. There's a religious freedom bill that was almost unanimously passed by the House and the Senate and sent to Governor Steve Beshear for a signature. It is House Bill 279. Representative Bob Dameron, he's the one who sponsored this bill. It was really serious because the bill passed the House initially. You have to understand, in Kentucky, we have 100 representatives. The bill passed the House 82-7. It's a Democratic-controlled House, folks. 82-7. So the Democrats wanted this religious freedom bill sent to Governor Steve Beshear, their Democratic governor. And in the Senate, you know, which is a Republican-controlled branch, but the Senate passed this 29-6. So both chambers almost unanimously voted for this religious freedom bill and sent it to Governor Steve Beshear for his signature. And Governor Steve Beshear decided he was going to go against his own party and against every representative that we elect to represent us and to push our agendas through. He decided he was going to veto this, even though it was an almost unanimous thing. Now, what makes this real interesting is, do the Democrats have enough guts, because today is the final day of this legislative session, do the Democrats in Kentucky have enough guts to override Steve Beshear's veto? That's going to be the question going forward. I haven't caught the latest update. I'm going to work on that as the show progresses when we take a break and see if there's anything out there yet. But it's really interesting because here you have this majority Democrat House overwhelmingly approving this legislation to send for a signature, and Steve Beshear says, screw him. Now, the latest that we had, that I had going forward, came out last night, but House Speaker Greg Dumbo, that's what I call him, his real name is Stumbo, but it's Dumbo to me, has said that there will be a vote called to override this veto on House Bill 279. The caucus, they had a caucus on this. It gave everybody one more vote to those who wanted to override it to see if they could. It's going to need 51 votes total on the House floor to override it. From what I understand, in one of the meetings that they had, the vote was actually 27 to 26. So there was a one-person majority out of the few that actually decided whether they wanted to vote on this or not that are willing to go ahead and take this forward. Now, for those of you not in Kentucky, this is a huge step for Kentucky. Democrats typically eat their young. They will sell their soul to the devil, but they always come together at crunch time, regardless of what they believe in or don't believe in, and they do it for the sake of the party, not we the people. And I'm not letting Republicans off the hook here. Republicans do the same thing. They just have the minority power in most cases in the state of Kentucky, so they really don't have as much of an effect as a Democratic Party base does. But what's really interesting to me is there was 89 that voted initially, and the vote was 82-7. So that means, 11 people in our House decided they didn't want to be involved in this. And more importantly, when you get to the veto, Steve Beshear, we knew he was going to veto it, and he did veto it. Now all of a sudden it's 27-26 on whether to take this forward to override his veto. So all of a sudden the 7 that voted against this bill in the first place are now joined by at least 15-20 others who voted for this bill in the first place. You tell me that doesn't reek of internal politics and threats and everything else, and I'm going to have to question you, because there's no doubt in my mind that this does. And what's really interesting as well is Steve Beshear is sitting out here saying that this thing, the reason he vetoed is it, because it could cause some unintentional consequences. It could threaten public safety, health care, and individual civil rights, which is a big joke. The Louisville Human Rights Commission, the ACLU, and the Kentucky Equality Federation are saying that this could lead to discrimination. But the reality is that this bill is doing nothing more than trying to reinforce what they had done in the past. This House Bill 279, the so-called Religious Freedom Bill, is just trying to make sure that people are free to believe as they choose and they're not going to have government interfering in their personal lives and their personal choices. That's it. Most of this kind of stuff was set in motion by things like Obamacare. It's really interesting. As Bob Dameron pointed out, this bill is basically restoring the proper legal standard for government to force compliance over religious beliefs that was in place before recent rulings of the U.S. Kentucky Supreme Courts. Anytime you get the equality guys involved, anytime you get the LGBT involved, the ACLU, the Catholic Conference of Kentucky, I love to see these guys on the other side screaming and screaming and screaming because they're not getting their way. When you got all those guys standing together to try to beat you, you know you're doing something right. You really are. You know you're doing something right. So we'll see what happens. Let's see if they go forward with it. Again, I'll look for an update on this as soon as possible. We'll probably go to break here in about, 10, 15 minutes or so, and we will start looking for the updates on this story in the meantime. Other news. Rand Paul. This guy just keeps doing the right things. He's keeping his nose in the news. He's making the news every day. It's going to be really, really interesting going forward to see if he really is going to be a threat in 2016 for the presidency. But what we've got going right now is Rand Paul is doing what he can to try to decriminalize marijuana, and I think that he's absolutely right. Rand Paul, riding after his filibuster, he actually won the CPAC straw poll last week. On Sunday, he was being interviewed by Fox News' Chris Wallace, and he was asked why he advocates for more lenient marijuana laws. And what Rand Paul said was, I don't want to promote that, but I also don't want to put people in jail who make a mistake. There are a lot of young people who do this, smoke marijuana, and then later on in their 20s, they grow up, they get married, they quit doing things like this. I don't want to put them in jail and ruin their lives. Now, this is what most people agree with. I mean, that's essentially what's going on. We're putting people in jail for smoking a joint and ruining their lives. But then Rand Paul told the obvious. He told the truth and he told the obvious. He said, look, the last two presidents could conceivably have been put in jail for their drug use. And I really think that if you look at what would have happened, it would have ruined their lives. They got lucky, but a lot of poor kids, particularly in the inner city, don't get lucky. They don't have good attorneys. They don't have good attorneys, and they go to jail for these things, and I think it's a big mistake. And he's absolutely right. George Bush was notorious for cocaine use, although he would never admit it. But Barack Obama actually detailed his drug use in Dreams from My Father. In Dreams from My Father, he wrote that pot had helped him, booze had helped him, and a little blow when you could afford it. Blow, of course, is cocaine. You know, so he's clearly admitting to drug use and everything else in his younger years. He didn't go to jail. His life wasn't ruined. He's president of the United States. So why should we not be compassionate for others in the same situation? Why are we ruining people's lives over stupidity, in my opinion, instead of helping them move forward and have a productive life? Everybody makes mistakes. I've often said I was no Bill Clinton. When I was a teenager, I experimented, and you bet. I inhaled quite frequently, and I loved every minute of it. It didn't ruin my life. I haven't done it in over, 30 years now. But it didn't ruin my life. We didn't care about putting people in jail for smoking a joint back then. I know police officers who just stole your bag of weed and kept it for their personal use and let you go. That's how important it was then. But now they want to put you in jail for anything and everything. And why? Because it's a money thing. They put you in jail, put you in the system. It's going to cost you a lot of money, and they're going to have to pay something into the system they can't get revenue for any other way. It's ridiculous. It really is. Let's go to the phones. Mayo?
That it is.
Awesome, awesome. What's going on, my friend?
I was just listening to what you were saying there, and I mean, I don't believe DUI, but you're also talking about ruining people's lives. Why is it so much worse for a DUI, for a legal substance, than it is as long as, I mean, you can be caught with an 8-ball of cocaine as long as it's not broken up for distribution, and it's less impact on somebody's life than one DUI.
That's really interesting, because I know here in Louisville, we've actually had in-depth stories done, and one of my favorite reporters in Louisville is John Bowell over at Wave 3. He does a lot of these undercover investigations and stuff. But it's really fascinating, because here in Louisville, we have had guys with 5, 6, 7 DUIs that have never, ever spent a day in jail other than being drunk when they were arrested and getting out a couple hours later when they sobered up, going to court, being let go, being charged a fine, you know, and getting in a car and driving away on a suspended license right from the courthouse. You know, but you catch a guy with you know, a half a quarter of weed, and he's going to jail.
Well, some states like, New Hampshire, I think you have to have over a quarter ounce on your possession, and the cops, you know, don't even mess with you. It's not, you know, worth their time. You know, there's a difference between using or being a recreational user and a dealer, but it just gets me, you know, you're talking about impacting or, you know, what Rand Paul's statement was, ruining people's lives. So you got a guy stops off work, you know, after busting his butt on a construction job, has two, three beers at the, you know, with the guys at the bar. You know, most guys, construction, that size, muscle mass, they're, you know, a little relaxed, but they're not stupid.
Sure.
But this guy now has lost his license, lost his ability to provide for his family, you know, mark on his record, and, you know, what, anywhere between $750 and $1,300 just to get his license back, you know, between court cost fees, fines, the, you know, the DUI classes, et cetera.
This is all a money scam, is it not?
I think so. I mean, what you and I talked, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, I mean, as far back as 4 or 5 years ago with cell phones and texting, there's been more car accidents due to cell phones and texting than there has, you know, DUIs. But yet you can't take somebody's license away for texting.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, that down. Actually, there are some places that are actually considering that. You know, I haven't seen anything passed yet, but I do know that that has been talked about. But, you know, the reality is that there's going to be people out there that are going to do stupid things. You know, if you do something stupid one time, should you pay for it the rest of your life? Or you know, if you're a repeat offender, these guys who have been arrested for DUI and everything else 5, 6, 7 times, who are leaving a parking lot on a suspended license from the courthouse itself, those guys have proven a track record that they don't care. They're going to do what they want to do. So when I look at that and I pay attention to that, then I have to start asking the question. It looks like we lost Mayo. He'll probably call back. So when I look at that, I have to start asking the question, what constitutes, you know, a situation where somebody's life is going to be ruined over mistakes? You know, when I was brought up, you made a mistake, there was a consequence of that action. But the more mistakes you made, the consequences escalated. Good example. Good example. You know, a lot of our audience is in their 30s and 40s, so presumably a lot of you guys, well, our audience runs from about 25 to 50. So presumably a lot of you folks at that age have at least one child. Most of you. I won't say all of you, but a lot of you do. So when we look at this in play and you think about your baby, when your baby first starts crawling around the house, you're all excited and everything else. But if your baby walks up or crawls up and touches an electrical outlet, what do? The first time, you're probably going to yell no or something to that effect, pull the baby away and say no, no, no. Sometimes they learn from that. Most times they don't. So there's usually a second time in that situation. Because from the time we're born, we're trying to push our boundaries and our limits. So the second time they walk up and they get ready to touch that light socket, you've already told them no once. They didn't get that. Maybe you raise your voice. No, don't do that. And they get real stern, you know, and maybe that's enough to shake that baby up. Who knows? But the third time they go to do it, you have to set an example. Make sure they know that this is to protect them, not to hurt them. So you grab that year-old baby or whatever it is. You lightly tap them on their diapered butt, and you say, no, no, real stern. You know, the point is, discipline is always escalated. And in the case, when I see DUI guys out there that have been in and out of the system 5, 6, 7 times, and they're not being held accountable with escalated discipline because of who they know, they pay an attorney $2,000 or $2,500 because this particular attorney is close friends with a judge, or they split the money down the middle or whatever he has to do to buy himself out of it, then we've got a problem. Then we've got a problem. And Rand Paul is sitting here saying that marijuana use is not that big a deal to where we have to destroy young people's lives. Quite frankly, most people are going to try it. You don't have to believe me, But really, our teenage kids today will try anything once, seemingly. So why do we want to ruin our life? Barack Obama admitted to doing cocaine, admitted to over-drinking, admitted to smoking marijuana, and was elected president. Would he have still been elected president if he had a conviction for smoking marijuana? Or if he had a conviction for getting caught with cocaine? Would Obama still have made it to president? I think not. I think not. And I think ultimately that's what we really come down to. So when we look at the DUI, for example, and we look at the way this thing is picked and torn apart, personally, from my personal experience, a former marijuana smoker many years ago, a former heavy drinker many years ago, personally, I would prefer to smoke marijuana and get behind the wheel of a car than I would to drink. I don't think that it's that much of a difference between the two of them, because everything in life really boils down to moderation. There are limits. When I was in construction, as Mayo pointed out a minute ago, a lot of construction guys will stop off for a beer or two at a bar. I did. I had myself on a 2-beer limit. I would never drink more than 2 beers. So if we went to a bar after work, I would drink 2 beers in about an hour and a half, 2-hour time, and I'd drive home. I wasn't wasted. I wasn't drunk. I wouldn't have blown anything negative on a breathalyzer that would have put me in any kind of bad situation. But I knew that if I got drunk or if I overdrank, there were going to be repercussions for my actions. Because I didn't know a lawyer who knew a judge, and I couldn't give him $2,000 to split with the judge so they could get me out of it. Not then. So we really got to look at the severity of what's going on here. And continuing to put young people in jail for getting caught with a couple of joints is beyond the pale for me. And I agree with Rand Paul. If Barack Obama can become president after admitting to being, you know, enjoying cocaine when he could afford it, admitting to smoking marijuana, admitting to over-drinking, then why are we destroying so many young guys? Because these guys are our future. Are they, or is the New World Order, as my good friend Dale likes to think of the New World Order, the conspiracy theory thing, is the New World Order trying to get rid of all the competition? You know, there's a lot of things here to look at. But Rand Paul is right on the marijuana. We've talked about that repeatedly on this show. We need to decriminalize it, you know, and start doing things the right way, because we are destroying lives for no reason, and it's just beyond the pale. You know, one other thing I want to talk about Rand Paul real quick, and then we'll get into a few other things. But Rand Paul, gun control filibuster, yes, that was announced this morning, that Rand Paul is debating whether to have a new filibuster over gun control. He and Ted Cruz out of Texas have already said they're going to filibuster the motion to proceed to debate on gun legislation. Essentially what it boils down to, it's not going to be the same kind of a situation that Rand Paul just went through with that 13-hour filibuster, but it is going to be a filibuster nonetheless. You know, the real deal here for me is why we've got to get to this point. It really does. Because when you talk about Harry Reid, for example, Reid is going to go ahead and let this debate, so-called debate, take place on the floor and everything else. And they're going to sit here, Majority Leader Harry Reid is going to sit here, let them debate this in the Senate, blah, 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 blah. And it's all a big show. Because the Senate is not going to sit here and limit the size of clips and go after semi-automatic weapons. They're not going to do it. We already know this. So this is nothing more than a show for Harry Reid for votes, for the Democrats and the votes. You know, it's fascinating that we the people have to continue to be put through this, because conservatives know once the bill reaches the floor, it's not going to do anything. The Democrats are going to try to put amendments on the daggone thing that's going to get more restrictions and everything else. Reid's going to allow the liberals to sit there and talk about clip capacity and assault weapons, even though he knows in advance that those will be defeated. Those proposals will be defeated. But he wants to give Democrats a chance to vote for him so they can help them in the competitive states. So what you get, moderate Democrats who are in competitive states that may be up for some serious competition in the next election. They get a chance to vote no, which is an easy vote to make because you know it's not going to pass anyway, so you vote no. They get to vote no, and they get to show that these are Democrats that are loyal to our Second Amendment gun rights. What a crock. What a crock. It's nothing more than the same dumb game that we continue allowing these jokes to put on. In the meantime, what are they doing? They certainly didn't pass a budget. They just got us an extension to get us through this year. They still are not doing their job. They want to play these silly games over stuff that they know they're not going to get. They're going to spend days and weeks on this kind of arguments that they know are not going to go anywhere, rather than face the reality that we have to talk about the serious issues in this country. That's the way it is. It is totally mind-boggling to me that we, the American people, are continuing to allow this kind of behavior. I don't get it. And, of course, maybe, just maybe, I'm not supposed to. I don't know. We're going to take a quick break. We get back. We're going to switch gears just a little bit. I want to get into some serious situations. Municipalities filing bankruptcy. Stockton, California started their hearings today. And we're going to talk about pensions and why pensions are bankrupting the American economy. We'll be right back. This is the Ed Spencer Show here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Spencer of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Don Henley, of course, singing. I find that song. I just love that song. Talks about all these whiny-ass titty babies. And, you know, the biggest whiny-ass titty babies we have are in Washington, D.C. That's right. You know, these guys continue wanting to sit here and ignore their constitutional duties. They want to sit here and continue going after us. They want to sit here complaining and playing all these silly games. A second ago I was talking about Rand Paul and gun rights. Him and Ted Cruz are going to filibuster anything these idiots, Majority Leader Harry Reid, is going to try in the Senate. And it's really interesting to me because we still are having problems getting answers. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. You know, we know that the federal government, Department of Homeland Security and everything else, has bought up, the Obama administration has bought up roughly 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition over the last year. We've talked about that repeatedly on this show. It's handgun ammunition. You can't get handgun ammunition right now. You just really can't. We have no reason why, other than the fact that the government is buying it all up. They refuse to talk to Congress and try to give them a legitimate explanation of why. Why does the Department of Homeland Security need all of these mini tanks, if you will, on the American streets? Why does the government need 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition? They admit that they shoot about 15 million rounds a year for training. That's a hell of a lot of bullets, 1.6 billion. They can run a war right now and shoot every American five times with the ammunition that they have available to them that they have already purchased. They can shoot every American in this country five times. They can run a 25-year war nonstop. That is pretty incredible when you sit and think about it. So when we come here, we're having budget problems. We're having problems finding money for anything. And what does the Congress, or what does Obama do? Well, the Department of Homeland Security, who continues ignoring Congress, wanting to know why they keep doing this arms buildup, they just announced that they're going to buy another, yes, another 360,000 rounds of hollow point bullets that they want to add to their stockpile over the last year. Now, they continue sitting here trying to say that the reason they're purchasing such a large amount of ammunition is because they're buying it in bulk to save money. And that this ammunition is for training purposes only. Folks, I don't know too many people who train with hollow point bullets. The military didn't train with hollow point bullets when I was there. And according to former Marine Richard Mason, he's quoted over at MinutemenNews.com for a story on this, says that that's garbage. As a former Marine, he was there 4.5 years, never shot a hollow point at all. They didn't see any hollow points at all during his term there. I didn't see them when I served active duty. Nobody that I've talked to that's a veteran today or active duty today has ever shot or seen hollow points in training. So somebody explain to me why the Department of Homeland Security needs over 1.6 billion rounds that they have right now, and they plan on buying another 360,000 rounds. We don't know. We don't know. But it certainly appears that Homeland Security is working with the Obama administration to take over America. That's all we can think about. That's all we can think about. Because I don't know any other way to put this. I don't know any way to say that it's not going to happen. I don't know any way to say that, you know, that things are so good, you know, that they can afford to buy all this ammunition because that we're not using. Since when does the Department of Homeland Security need enough ammunition to wage a 25-year constant war against the American people? Nobody knows. And Barack Obama says this is the most transparent presidency ever. Anybody else believe that or have a problem with that? Because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, you have to look here at something that Obama said during a campaign speech in July of 2008. The president at that time said, "We cannot continue to rely on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We have got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, and just as well funded." Does that answer your question, folks? You have got to have a civilian force that's just as strong and well-funded as the military. Many people around this country, including me, believe that we are headed towards a police state in every sense of the word. When you look at the stories that the mainstream media won't report, you look at the abuses going on by every police department in the world today, or in the United States today, you're seeing over-aggressive police officers getting completely out of hand and not being held accountable. Now you've got a federal government who is going to arm Department of Homeland Security, you know, the home of things like the TSA that like to fondle old women and little babies. We've got mega reports out of there, most of which don't hit mainstream media. They want to be trusted, and we're not supposed to be questioning why. We've got a serious situation going on here, folks, and it doesn't matter whether you believe me or not. It really doesn't. It doesn't matter one bit whether you believe I'm right or wrong. But you ask yourself this question. When in America have we had a buildup of this type by a government agency of ammunition and weapons that can only be used and will only be used against civilians? Is the government starting a military-type war conflict with the citizens that it purports to represent? I don't know. You got to be the judge of that. But there are alarming things going on here that we're not getting straight answers to. And quite honestly, the American people need to do one simple thing. Wake up. Because it's alarming the road we're going down. When you start talking about the economy tanking, things going crazy, you know, every civil unrest that's went on in this world has followed this same pattern. The economy gets weak, people start getting hungry, people start turning to crime, government takes the weapons, bam, you're no longer free. You're no longer free. This isn't a new wheel. This isn't a reinvention of the wheel. This is a copycat. This is like the daggone serial killer, the copycat killers that follow serial killers around. We're just copying somebody else's game. The prospect of a civil unrest has got to make you think about that statement by Obama and the civilian National Security Force. You have to start thinking of that. Because when the people get rested and they stand up and they have this uprising, and quite frankly, a lot of people believe that's where we're headed. I hope not. I don't want to see that kind of violence in American streets. I don't want to see that kind of a civil unrest war. We went through that with a civil war. I don't want to see that again. But when you look at this in play, you look at this major military buildup for civilian forces, military-style buildup, I should say, for civilian forces that the president is going to direct, that's way too much power for one man in a free society. Way too much. So we've got to start paying attention. You know, I talked a second ago, before we went into break, about these bankruptcies and everything else going on across the country. You know what? It's something that is, I think, reinforcing what I'm trying to tell you about the economy and about civil unrest. The stage is being set. It really is. We've got a story coming out of Stockton, California, you know, which I've told you before. Stockton has filed bankruptcy, and, you know, they're just now starting to be heard. For whatever reason, you know, they actually filed back in June of last year. But, you know, Stockton is now filing for the bankruptcy. They're starting the trial today, but they're not alone. There have been 31 municipal bankruptcy filings since January of 2010. 31. They include names you might know. County Stockton, California. You've got San Bernardino. You guys have heard about that. Jefferson County, Alabama, or Birmingham for you guys. We've covered that for years, for the last couple of years. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Central Falls, Rhode Island. Boise County, Idaho. Mammoth Lakes, California. It is mind-boggling to see how many of these places have went bankrupt and what the hell's going on. You know, we have to start thinking about all of this stuff because this stuff is a very serious concern to we, the American people. There's no doubt about that. So what do we do about it? What do we do about it? That's a real good question. I'm not sure. Because, you know, you're in a situation where nobody cares. Everybody's gotten so used to being fed this garbage called security that they don't think about it. But the problem is the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. And the poor of us outnumber the rich by a major percentage. And in many cases, your own brother will sell you out and take a job for security for a rich guy because he needs the job. And that, I think, is what's going on. They're forcing us to succumb, and the American people are doing it. As we talked about last night, this isn't a thing that happened overnight. It didn't start with Barack Obama. There has been a fight for the American mindset and a fight to divide the American people for 40 or 50 years now. For 40 or 50 years now. This has been an ongoing thing since at least the 50s. A lot of people believe it started in the 40s. I'm one of those people. Where each generation, every president or two, assumes more and more power and control. And it hurts all of us. And nobody is really, truly paying attention. Really, truly, not paying any attention. And you know what's really going on with this? Why you have places like Stockton, California, filing bankruptcy? Why you've got San Bernardino, Jefferson County, and a whole host of others? One of the biggest costs and one of the biggest problems is the unfunded pension liabilities that most states are facing today, including right here in my home state of Kentucky. These unfunded pension liabilities are destroying states. They are taking money away from everything, which could help with job creation, which could help with police officers and getting the streets under control, combating crime. There's so many things the states could be using with money that they are required. They're going to have to start putting into these pension plans. So what happens? You get a bunch of municipalities, you get a bunch of cities, you go around filing bankruptcy and doing all these other things to try to force the federal government to give them the same bailout that they gave to the banks, who in many cases created this kind of a problem. Think I'm lying? Check out the story of Jefferson County, Alabama, and Birmingham, Alabama. Start checking out interest rate swaps and derivative trading and everything else. All the illegal stuff that Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and all these other guys were doing to put these cities in this situation. They got bailout money from the federal government for their organizations, but the cities suffered. They didn't get squat for losing money because of these things. They didn't get squat. You need more? Turn to Chicago. Yep. I continue going back to Chicago because this is the home of our illustrious President Barack Obama. This is where Rahm Emanuel lives. This is where all of this stuff gets getting a little bit crazy. And nobody wants to pay attention to. But in Chicago, if you remember, just a few months ago, Chicago teachers went on strike back in September. What did they get? Well, they got a 17.6% raise over 4 years. They don't have anything tied to a merit pay increase, so they're not even responsible or accountable for doing their job to increase student test scores. They were able to get their health insurance increases cut off, So they were able to hold the line on that. They were able to protect seniority pay increases and all this other stuff. They also gave laid off teachers first control or first rights of rehire. It was incredible to me because at that time, Chicago Teacher Union President Karen Lewis called this deal an austerity contract because it included lesser wage increases. Now I want you guys to think for a minute. How many people in this economy are getting a 17.6% pay increase over 4 years? Can anybody think of one? Your private sector isn't doing it. They can't afford to. They can't afford to. But your government sector is. Your government sector is giving out these obscene increases. But what the real problem is, even ignoring the fact that these pay increases are going to cost $74 million a year the first year, even ignoring that reality, what about the hidden cost, the pension cost? These guys aren't going to get any kind of increases in their health care, so they ain't got to worry about that, okay? Chicago teachers make an average of about $76,000 a year. How many of you guys would like to average that? So what does Chicago do? Oh, by the way, they've got a pension fund, an unfunded pension plan, a liability of about $7.1 billion. Their pension fund is only 60% funded, which is well below the 80% that most people consider to be healthy. You can go to Reuters for this information. It's there. So what do? Well, Chicago has no money. Illinois has no money. The teachers fought, and they wanted everything given to them on a silver platter. Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. Well, they just did. Mayo, go ahead.
I didn't know if this was where you was going, and I didn't want to ruin your punchline, so to speak. But didn't Chicago just say they were closing 38 schools because they couldn't afford?
That's actually exactly where I'm going, Mayo. Chicago Public Schools last Thursday announced they were going to close 54
schools.
They're going to close 54 school programs and 61 school buildings. Now, you tell me, this is what the Chicago Teachers Union has wanted, right? They're getting what nobody in the private sector could possibly get. It's not costing them a dime. We're paying for it. Now, they're not selling a product. We're paying for it. They're among the poorest performing schools in the entire nation, and they're demanding these raises. They're not even going to be held accountable by merit pay increases. They're not going to be held accountable for that. And this is going to be the largest planned school closings ever, anywhere in the United States. And according to Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis, basically said that the closures are going to send the district into chaos. Rahm Emanuel's administration. She calls Rahm Emanuel the murder mayor because he's murdering public services, murdering our ability to maintain public sector jobs, and now he has his sights set on our public schools. What the hell is this lady thinking? I'm not a Rahm Emanuel fan, but you got to have a dollar to pay. If you ain't got a dollar and you're not willing to meet halfway on that, you got to take something away. That's all you can do. I don't like Rahm Emanuel, but personally, I think anybody that is considered, the murder mayor because they're murdering public services is going to have me looking at them again, and I might have to change my mind. But public services are the biggest drain on our communities, are they not?
Well, it's like it doesn't seem any of them can do math. I mean, like you said, they got what they wished for. They got their raise, but if there's only so much money in the bank, you can only give so much out. I mean, just like, what was it, the Hostess, the American Bakers, whatever union, one little group of, 70-something didn't go along with the rest of the union. They closed down Hostess.
Yep, and they lost their Twinkies, man.
Yeah, lost Twinkies.
But by the way, those are coming back. But, it's a fascinating story because Chicago is a great example. Everything that happens in Chicago is a great example of what's wrong with a liberal mindset in America, because all of our politicians and all of our politics come out of Chicago these days. They have since the first day that Barack Obama ever decided he was going to run for public office. You know, and I look at all of this stuff, and it just blows me away. Professor Robert Bruno, he's a professor of labor and employment relations at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He's also the director of the labor education program in Chicago. And he points out that across the board on every issue, the teachers got a more favorable outcome than the school system itself. So the teachers pressed for this. They're the ones who wanted this. They're the ones who set this in motion. And now they're sitting back crying foul because they got what they wanted. Now they're sitting back crying foul because they have to sit here and absorb lost jobs and everything else, and absorb more students in the classrooms, and absorb all the problems that go along with that because they weren't willing to work in a way that Chicago could afford. Now, don't get me wrong. Seriously, don't get me wrong, Mayo. Here's the thing. I know that if you look at the graft, greed, and corruption that goes on in Chicago and across Illinois, I mean, the last two or three governors are in prison, for God's sake. All right.
Blagojevich.
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah, Blago. You know, we look at this. We know that these guys are in prison for stealing money. I guarantee you there's hundreds of millions of dollars that you can acquiesce to graft, greed, and corruption in Illinois. I'm sure of that. I'm fairly sure of that. So they've got the money to pay the teachers the raises they want and everything else. But the problem is most of that graft, greed, and corruption, or at least a large percentage of it, is tied to what? Union, thuggery, and politics. You got to grease the wheel and grease the pig. And unfortunately, the unions are the ones who are controlling everything there. Now, I've been a big union supporter. I always have been. I think people should have the right to organize. But I don't think that a union should have the right to force a company out of business in the private sector. And I don't think that the public sector should have a right to get everything they want so that they can walk away from the fire department, police department, the public schools, whatever, just so that they can get more money that we can't afford to pay. You know, if we're all in this together, then we all have to suffer equally. Those teachers weren't losing anything. They weren't losing a damn.
They are now.
They are, exactly. Now they are. What does that say?
I don't know. It's like, where's the common sense gone? I mean, these people are supposedly teachers. They should be smarter than the average bear, but I don't know. Self-preservation, the OMI generation, greed. I don't know what you want to call it. There's so many things at work nowadays.
Well, I agree with you.
Me, I like bacon. Slaughter the pigs.
I agree with you. And that's, you know, that's what we're looking at. Because if you look at Chicago public schools, you know, here you've got teachers who don't want to have any burden put on them where they're held accountable. So you can't tie their pay increases to any kind of merit performance. You know, so forget that. They want to get paid no matter how bad their job they do, and they're getting it. But when you look at Chicago and you look at the public schools, you're looking at a public school students in Chicago have a graduation rate of about 60%. So only 60% of public high school students graduate in Chicago. The national average is 75%. So, you know, that is well below the national average. And we keep screaming about that. We're going through our own thing here trying to raise the graduation age of Kentucky. When you look at the unfunded pension plan liability of $7.1 billion, okay, that is going to have to be made up somewhere down the road. So essentially what's going on here is your public sector unions are forcing these cities like Stockton, California, and a few other ones to go bankrupt in the hopes that somewhere down the road the federal government is going to jump in and save their measly butts. So they don't really care what they're going to, you know, they don't really care. They're going to take what they can get all the way through the road. And when everything gets bankrupt, the federal government's going to come in. They give yet another $1 trillion bailout, and the unions are going to be the beneficiaries of it because those are the unfunded pension liabilities. The union pensions are the ones that are unfunded.
I'm going to say something here real quick and then throw me back in the queue. The worst one I heard, I believe, is like a small town, 37,000 people in California, but between the mayor and the sheriff, who had given themselves, you know, the golden parachute pension, each one upon retirement was like $1.5 million or something, and the the whole town went bankrupt. Now it's a ghost town.
They're not the only example. I know which one you're talking about, and forgive me, I can't think of what the name of it is off the top of my head. Damn it. I read a story earlier today, too. I'm sorry. I can't think of what the name of it is, but yes, you're right. They basically bankrupted the whole town, and the whole town is now a ghost town. But they're not the only example across the states. You know, you're looking at so many things here that are going on that the public sector unions are really the ones driving, in my opinion, to some degree, these poor economies. I really believe that. I think that we have got some major situations here, that we are going to have to work out. But we can no longer continue down the path of least resistance, folks. We can't do that. We have got to stand up and say no more. We can't continue allowing these so-called representatives to sit there and not represent us. We can't continue borrowing money to give away, not only to American citizens, who most, you know, some of which don't need it, but more importantly, the millions and billions of dollars that we give across the world. Last night, one of our callers said that, you know, it's amazing because the whole world laughs at us. Why wouldn't they? They could do anything they want. They could violate any human rights thing that they want to violate. And no matter what they want to do, it's okay because the U.S. is still going to give you millions or billions of dollars each year to help you rebuild whatever you tear up. That's essentially what we're doing. In the meantime, we've got cities going bankrupt right here on American soil. When those cities go bankrupt, the people who rely on government won't have a government to rely on. That's the issue. And that's what has to be addressed. We have got to make America healthy and strong again. And we're not going to do that when our government is doing everything they can to make the poor poorer and the rich richer and forget about everything in the middle. When they're doing everything they can to make sure that we can't defend ourselves when they finally get through with their ultimate takeover. When they're doing everything they can to force the civil unrest issue that most people don't want to think about and don't want, including me. But they're pushing the buttons. They're making it go. So it's up to you to push the buttons and make them go. Quit electing the same people over and over and over again. I don't care if this person loves abortion rights and this person hates abortion rights. All these divisive issues that they continue putting on us are what's destroying us. Abortion has been settled in the Supreme Court, so why do we have people on both sides of the aisle fighting over abortion rights? They can't make any laws to change that. They can't. It's been decided. That's what somebody else's individual lawsuits are for. So quit allowing yourself to be divided over the stupid stuff and pay attention. Our government is broke at the federal level. Our government is broke at the local level. From California to Rhode Island, from Michigan to Louisiana, everything in between. We the people are allowing this to happen. We the people have the power to fix it. But we the people have quite got to quit sitting back, blaming everybody else, and demanding more and more when there is less and less to be given or gotten. In the words of Don Henley in his song I played at the break, get over it. Hold them accountable. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, right here, same time, same channel. Don't forget to check out LouisvillePolitics.com for all your needs and links to stories and stuff. And Dale the Truth will be here tomorrow night. As you guys know, he took last Thursday night off. He was out of town. He'll be here tomorrow night with me on the Ed Springsteen Show, and then, of course, Thursday night with his own show at 7, and our good friend Ken Molman over at Liberty Unbridled on Sunday. In the meantime, folks, have a great night. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care.